Mr. Rayner Taylor, yes. Reel 6. I'd like now, when did you... You were there about 3 months.
Yes.
That's roughly speaking, August to November, 16.
Yes.
And then you got a posting. Could you tell me, was there any final assessment before you were posted?
No,
from your
bed? No.
How did it happen then?
Right from the Glamorgan Yeomanry into a you drafted...
No, I'm talking about when you left Priest Heath to go to the Glamorgan.
Oh, no, there was no ceremony about it. You were just posted to the Glamorgan Yeomanry from the Training Reserve Battalion.
So what happened?
Well, we gathered all our kit together.
Were there quite a few of you from...
Yes, sir. In fact, they made up the whole four squadrons of the Glamorgan Yeomanry. We were made up from the Training Reserve Battalions. But the NCOs and the basic, they were there waiting for you to join them.
Now, had your rich friend, Billy, had he gone yet?
Oh, he'd gone then.
He'd left at Priest Heath.
Oh, yes.
So you were with quite a few people you'd known from Priest Heath when you went?
Oh, yes. In fact, you knew basically them all.
And when you got there, so you went as a draft, the whole... Three or four squadrons, wasn't it?
Yes.
And what was the name of the unit you joined? It was a Glamorgan Yeomanry, but which part, which squadron?
Well, there was A, B, C and D squadron.
Which number, then, of the... Do you know it's second, first?
Oh, no, it was just the Glamorgan Yeomanry.
Was it a new unit?
Oh, no, very, very, very old. Territorial unit it was. That was the name.
And where were they when you joined them?
At Wrentham. And it was a tented camp. The winter. There wasn't enough tents for the men that were there, that were sent. So the condition was very overcrowded. There was no roads, as we know roads. The whole place was a sea of mud. Now, that, I think, was one of the worst times of my army career. After all, we've only just done basics. And we're said to be made into soldiers. And this is what happened.
What were the tents like? How many to a tent?
Well, now, normally, if you've got 10 in a tent, it would be pretty... It's full, because don't forget this, all your equipment, all that you possessed was also in the tent. Your equipment and your rifle, everything was in the tent. The rifles and anything you hung up, they used to tie a string round the tent pole and put wire on the hooks, anything. Nobody ever undressed, you know.
Would you stack your equipment by the tent pole in the middle then?
Yes, oh yes, you would try to do.
And what was there on the ground?
Depending. Usually there would be floorboards.
Even when it was tents?
Yeah. Oh yes. And they were like sectionalised. That's if you were lucky. If you weren't lucky, they were ground sheets. Now, this is what happened at Wrentham. When we got there... It was pretty obvious that there was no tents. They start off by allocating you so many to a tent, but there were so many left over, they have to add more too, and more too, until, believe it or not, 24 people slept in a tent with full equipment, and there were no floorboards, ground sheets, which had been laid on mud. It was horrible. And I say that it was horrible. It was more horrible for me because I was the last in the tent. I was the last in. Well, try as you imagine, a tent about as big as this room. There's 24 people milling round trying to sort themselves out.
About 10 foot square, then it was.
Oh, yeah.
Or round, rather.
And you'd lay, if you lay down, you'd No question about dressing yourself. You may take your tunic off. But even so, very rare took your tunic off. And you covered yourself with your greatcoat. There were supposed to be blankets. The blankets were very, very damp. You covered yourself with greatcoats. So there were 24 greatcoats spread all over people. It was horrible.
Which way did you lie? Head to the outside,
head
feet
to the
in?
Outside, feet to the pool.
And you all lay the same way?
It was like the father turned, you all turned. But a worst feature about that, especially from my point of view, during the night, if somebody wanted to pee, he got up. They got to walk on people to get to the flap of the tent, which they used to unfasten and turn back to get it out. But they didn't do that. They just opened the flap and pee through the flap. I'm here. And it ran
behind
down
the flap.
Yeah. And it ran down the edge of the, and I smell like a urinal in the morning. And this happened for 3 or 4 days before eventually got some more tents and things got a little bit better, but not much. All the time I was there, it was very, very bad indeed.
And that was November through December? Was it cold and
very
wet?
Very cold indeed. God intervened and blew the tents away, so they had to move us then.
Was that before Christmas?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the night of the... was it a storm? It must have been...
Oh, yes, yes. It was within... probably less than a mile from the east coast. And the east coast could be cold and it could be windy. And it blew it away.
While you were in it?
Whilst we were in it. Pandemonium. Blackout. Because in any case, you only had storm lamps. No lights. 24 people trying to sort themselves out, blowing a gale, in various stages of dress and undress. It was a pandemonium, that was. And whilst there, we were receiving sixpence a day, because we'd allotted our mothers half of our pay. Now, in the army in those days, you were lucky if you could catch up, or if your pay caught up to you. It was credited to you, so they said, you know. But according to the King's rules and regulations, a man must receive a certain amount of money. He must receive that. I may be wrong, but I think the figure was a shilling. A day's pay. Well, because we'd allotted her, we drew sixpence. And for the whole of the time at Rendon, all the weeks I was there, I never drew more than sixpence. And we used to have to line up, pay for aid, and unfortunately, on the tail end of the alphabet, getting that way on, and I stood there while everybody, their name was called, you walked up to the table, and the officer says, Taylor, such a number, and they always use the last two numbers, yes sir, and he gives you sixpence, and that had to last you for a week. It was, unless that really, family would send you something. The highlight for us was when we got a letter from my mother. She used to put 2 packets of woodbines in. Woodbines were 5 for a penny then, and they were in a paper packet. And she used to put 2 in a big envelope, and stuck inside one of them would be sixpence. So the highlight when we got a letter from my mother.
You used to get them while you were in England?
Oh, yes, yes.
When had you started smoking? When you joined the army or before?
Yes, yes. Before I went, I'd have that odd drag, but my dad didn't know, you know. Oh, no. But he smoked a pipe, but he didn't know I was smoking.
But you started more in the army.
Oh, yes. And at that time, it was whilst I was there that I began to drink beer. And I thought it was horrible stuff.
While you were at Rentham?
At Rentham, oh, yes. You remember, it wasn't tuppence for a pint, you know. And you might make it last all night.
You'd only drink the one, then?
Oh, yeah, you don't have no money for anything.
Did that affect you?
Basically, I can almost say how I spent my pay. 6 months. A cup of coffee, a penny. A rock bun, a penny. Now I've got that tuppence. A stamp, a penny. To tell my mother how well I was. Now, what else was I? I've spent threepence now. I've only tuppence to spend because I always like to keep a penny in case of. Often enough, perhaps buy another rock bun. But by Friday night, you were left with a penny. That was until the next period, the next week. So you couldn't live very wildly off a penny.
So you didn't get much chance to have a pint of beer.
Oh, no. It's only when I had a letter and I'm feeling a bit grown upish.
Did the beer make you drunk, your pint at all?
I don't think so, because one pint I would make sure it lasted all night, you know. Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you what we were served in. We were served in basins, I remember that. There was no pint pots or anything. There was a basin. You got when you had your tea, you used a basin for it. I suppose on the assumption that one would all more, would all less, you see. And it was there where we got bicycles.
You were issued with bicycles. At Rentham?
Yes, because the Glamorgan Yeomanry was a cavalry unit, a yeomanry cavalry unit. But because of circumstances, it had been... It'd been changed over from a cavalry unit to a dismounted cavalry unit, and they gave you bicycles. Now, the bicycles were civilian affair, in the main, civilian jobs, that had been called in or bought from the public or whatever. And
they weren't all the same pattern?
Oh, then. No. The pattern, the iron pattern, was a bike. Ooh, it weighed a ton. And there were rallies. They were built not for comfort, not for speed, for durability. And they needed to be, but others, they're always breaking down. And attached to each squadron would be two who had a rank of artificers. And I remember them because their rank was on their arm, and they'd be cross pincers.
Cross what?
Pincers, you know, like or pliers. They mended the bike. If they broke down, and it was very rare that they weren't broke down, because unscrupulous men made sure that it broke down. You could dodge with that, you see.
Just explain that a bit more. Why would they do that?
Well, to get down. Suppose you were going for a ride instead of where I used to rope. I think for a ride. When they got part on the way, they made sure something happened to the bike.
What sort of thing?
Well, they'd pull up and make sure that the spokes were bent or something like that. Or anything, to make sure that the artificer had to stop and mend their bikes. And so he could catch up to them. So they were straggling back to camp. Then it was an utter farce.
Did you ever do that?
I think so. Yes, I think I did. Oh, I wasn't an angel, not by any stretch of imagination. I joined anything like that.
How far would a cycling route march
be? Oh, about 15 miles, something like that, you know. It was quite a...
That's quite a way on those bikes.
Oh, yes. And, you know, some of the bikes had solid tyres. Solid tyres. You could just imagine what that was like. And they were hard work. They had a big carrier on the back, which you strap your big pack onto with all your everything in you. And alongside the frame were two clips, one on the front, one which fit the rifle, you see.
So you had to carry all your kit on?
Oh, yes, yes. And then get on even with these bikes. Laugh, because in the first place, they had to learn some of the people to learn how to ride a bike, them and anything else. And they said, you're owed two abreast, you see. Well, it would need somebody to fall off. And you were supposed to keep your distance so that you were able to stop if anything happened. But like motoring today, somebody fell off. Next man run into him, and before you were, it was all right. Massive pile up of bike. And the engineers were screaming, shouting their heads off, trying to restore order. And those in front of them just rode on and left. It was pandemonium. It wasn't successful at all. Caused a lot of fun.
Did you enjoy it at all, the bike riding? Because you'd been well, you cycled a bit
when
you were older.
Yes, reasonably, yes. Yeah.
Were you taught anything else to do with the bikes, like any sort of tactics?
No, no. We were taught how to stack them, which it just meant leaning one against another. That was all that we were taught.
You weren't taught anything about scouting or anything
oh,
like
no,
that?
No, no.
So
no.
You were just... Like route marching?
Just right back, route march on a bike. It didn't date long, perhaps a few weeks before the powers would be realised it was just a waste of time, you know. And the bike, I don't know where the bikes were, they gradually disappeared.
You know. So you had them at Wrentham?
Oh, yeah.
Now, when did you move from Wrentham to Beccles?
To Beccles, when the tents blew away.
And would that be before Christmas?
Yeah.
So that would be probably December, would
yes,
it be?
Yes, yeah.
And what accommodation were you put in at Beccles?
Huts. And it was sheer luxury.
Were these huts similar to the huts at Priest Heath?
Oh, yes, yes. Big army huts. Oh, yes, they were. Compared to what we'd had, it was absolute luxury.
And did you still have your bikes while you were at Beccles?
Yes, we lost them at Beccles. They took them off us when we got to Beccles.
And you were at Beccles until you went to France?
Yeah.
Now, we've looked at some of the things you did at Beccles while we were talking about Priest Heath. For instance, you did most of your rifle training, shooting there. And your bayonet training.
No, we fired our course at Beccles. We fired our course while we still had the bikes, because we rode from Beccles to Bury St Edmunds to fire the course on the bikes. We must have saved the government a bit of money by riding on bikes.
And you'd also, this is where you did a lot of your bayonet drill practice, at Beccles.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what about, did you do your hand grenade training while you were at Beccles?
At Beccles, yeah.
Could you tell me what that was? How you would be using Mills bombs, wouldn't you?
All Mills, yeah.
How were you trained in the hand grenade?
Well, in the first place, you were told the mechanics of the bomb itself, what it did, how lethal it was, and how much care you had to exercise.
Do you still remember the mechanics?
Oh,
of
yes.
Could
very
you tell
much
us?
So. It's an egg-shaped or oval-shaped, about the size of a fist, serrated, and a loop at the top with a handle. Now, this handle, it looped over the top, under some neural guards or something, and you pulled it down and pressed it to the grenade, and below that there was two protrusions stuck out with a hole through, and a pin fitted through those two holes which held the handle. Now, when you took that pin out, you must hold the handle down, because immediately the handle was released, it started the detonator. And in 5 seconds, the grenade would blow up. Now, a grenade is a lethal thing. So if you throw it, you take the pin out, throw it, and by throwing it you release the handle. The handle would fly off. And in 5 seconds, it would explode. So didn't give much time after the grenade had landed before it blew up, you know. They were lethal things. And at the bottom of a grenade was that there was a hole drilled. And they could screw a bar in this hole. And you could thread this bar down a rifle. And in the fastened onto the top of the rifle was a cup. You could slip this grenade into the cup, release, take the pin out, but this cup held the handle down. Now, when you fired, and it was fired by blanks, when you fired it, and it immediately left the cup, it released the handle, just like you're throwing it. The only difference was you could get a bigger distance by using it as a rifle grenade. They were lethal things. And you were taught how to handle them, how to throw them.
Now, when you were first being taught how to throw them, surely they didn't teach you with live...
Oh, no. They were blank. They were dummies, you know. Oh, yes.
And how did you throw them? Can you describe it?
Oh, yes. You stand sideways to the object and throw like in the manner of a boar. And throw overarm, releasing the grenade at the top.
Like a cricket bowler.
Just like a cricket bowler. And immediately, ducking down. You didn't wait to see where it had landed, you know.
Would you practice these with these dummies? Would you even then be in a trench to practice?
Oh, yes. Because often, you know, in a trench you didn't have much room to spread yourself. You chuck them the best way you could. But basically, that was the way to throw a grenade.
So you practiced that in a trench with
dummies? Oh, yes.
And then what was the next stage after the...
took about a couple of live ones. When you'd thrown two live ones, you were considered proficient.
Now, how was throwing a live one? That must have been very tightly organised. How did they do it?
Well, trenches, if they were dug as the manual, they were dug in, I haven't got the words for them, in squares, like. And that was done so that they couldn't be fired on, or enfiladed, I think they call that word. And you were taught to throw these, but it was always a very... It was a nice experience, because everybody was a little bit uptight about them. If you let go of it, if it fell out of your hand, well, it would be... It's every man for himself, you know.
When you were doing your practice throws, these two live ones, you wouldn't all surely be in the area. You'd just be you, and would there be an officer?
You'd be in the trench. You'd be in the trenches. Oh, yes.
No, but how many would be with you when you did your tests?
Well, probably the sergeant or the bomb instructor. He'd show you how to do it, and you'd do it, and perhaps there were only two of you in one... there's
bay.
A word for it. One bay. There'd be two of you there.
So if you dropped it, he was there. He was there to try and sort.
Oh yes. I've never seen anything like that. I've heard of it, where they both have been either killed or seriously injured. I've heard tell of a quick thinking bomb man picking it up and throwing it, getting it away in time. I've heard of that. Never seen it, of course, but it
did. So there were no accidents in your unit.
In my unit, no. No, I know.
But you felt nervous with it.
Very, very nervous. Very glad we hadn't done it.
How far could you throw it? At that time?
Well,
roughly? Because they're quite heavy, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I might throw it the length of a cricket pitch. Might manage that.
So about 22 yards?
Something like that. With a...
Now, what about... Did you actually practice fire with a...
A rifle grenade. Oh, yes. No, I enjoyed that. That was funny. I enjoyed that.
You weren't nervous with them?
No,
they're
no.
They're even more dodgy.
No. In a trench, or in a shallow, or whatever place they chose to put you for your training. And the rifle was already set up. It had this thing screwed on the end. And you get the live grenade. And the instructor would make sure, although you'd done a lot of practicing with dummies, make sure that you get the grenade and you push it in through this cup and down into the barrel of the rifle. And as it reached the cup, holding the spring, you pull the pin out and slip it down into the cup so that the handle was still held in place. It was held in place by this cup, you see.
Now, was that easy to do? It sounds a bit fiddly with something that could explode.
Easy, providing you didn't think a lot about it. Yes, it's really reasonably easy. Now, there was no such a thing as pointing the rifle at something. Oh, no, you didn't do that because the grenade was... It's in this cup right at the end of the rifle. And even if you pointed it at an object, the very weight of a grenade, it's falling all the time. And what they used to do, they stood the rifle at an angle. Like
that. About 45 degrees.
45.
With the butt in the ground.
The butt stuck in the ground. I held with the other hand like that. And pulled the trigger. Now, the blank would go off and it would blow this grenade out, release the handle, and you could get nearly 100 yards with it, you know. Oh, yeah. So much so that you were able to, you could watch the explosion. You could do that in quite safety because It wasn't lethal at that distance, you know.
Now, that worried you less
than
the actual...
Oh, yes. Oh, I didn't mind that.
Did some people have the other opinion?
Oh, yes.
Some people preferred throwing them and firing
them. Yes,
Was everybody trained in rifle grenades?
Everybody. It was part of your training. But rifle grenades, they weren't used a lot. Not a great lot. No, I couldn't say that.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, if you're using the rifle as a rifle grenade, it's not much use for anything else. And it's depending what you were doing, whether it was...
It would damage the rifle? Or...
It wouldn't damage it, but you couldn't use it with this thing stuck on the end. There may have been a couple of rifle grenades in a company, you know. Maybe a couple of them.
But you weren't to be one of them?
Oh, no, I wasn't one of them, no. I wasn't even a machine gunner.